Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay and my co-hostess, Misty Hall. And we're here to bring you tonight our show about straight wives. Hi, Misty. How are you?
I'm fine tonight, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are things in, are you in Kentucky?
Yes, I am.
You're still there, right?
I'm still here. And we had sunshine today.
We did, too, in Philadelphia. The sun is shining, and it was almost 55 degrees, I think.
Wow.
I think spring is on its way.
I think it is showing up.
I know. It was a long, long winter, and hopefully it's behind us. Because as I told you last time, I think that this winter really, on top of everything else that our women are going through, it really depresses you even worse.
You know, isn't the grief of this type of information very similar to the seasons? I mean, it's very seasonal. And some people use grief as a metaphor when referring to the season. So it is, especially these, the more darkness there is,
mm-hmm.
sort of parallels with the darkness in our own life when we find out that our partner or spouse or husband is gay. So, you know, it's the darkness is not a good place to be sometimes. It gets long in the winter, that's for sure.
And some of those winters are never ending for a lot of our women. And that's why we're here to show you the kinds of support that you need to help you through this, you know, time. And as we always say, Misty, gay husband recovery is a process. It doesn't happen in 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. It's an ongoing process, and there are a lot of things that pull you back to that dark place, a lot of things that trigger those reactions. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. That was very well said. It, you know, sometimes when we think we are prepared and have enough courage to exit a straight gay marriage, you know, sometimes we forget of all the work that we've got to put into it. And I think there's a lot of reasons that build us up to believe that, you know, we sometimes, you know, it's in mainstream things like, which I'm sure you've heard of, The Secret and things like that in terms of law of attraction. Yeah, you know, we can improve and get this wonderful life. But let me tell you, it's hard work. No one handed it to us. You know, to get to where you are, get to where I am today, it is hard work to get here. But let me tell you, it's the best hard work you'll ever do. It really is.
And also, we just want to let our friends who are listening know that if you want to call in and if you have a question, we're happy to have you on as our guest. And our phone number here is area code 646-716-4893. And you can feel free to call in anonymously, or you can tell us who you are. Either way, whatever questions you might have, we're more than happy to answer them for you. I think that tonight, Misty, we were talking about so many of the women who come to us that they don't have the information they need to make a decision because they're living with someone who's living a lie. And this becomes a major issue on how do I prove that my husband is gay. So let's talk a little bit about that.
I think that's one of the, I think of all the topics covered in a gay-straight relationship, honestly, I think this is one of the most important topics there is to cover. It's that important because, as you and I both know, most of the women that come to us, they're living this. They question themselves. They have suspicions, and then they feel guilty for having such suspicions because who on earth would want to accuse their husband of being gay? You know, and who on earth would want to accuse him of being gay falsely? That would be even worse.
And who even wants to believe that their husbands are gay?
Absolutely. It's just, it's one of the hardest things to even, it's a hard thought to even have in your mind. And I think we wrap a lot of guilt around even having that thought.
And I think that the problem is that so many of these men are in deep denial. And when I say deep denial, they're in denial themselves. And if they can't be honest with themselves, then they certainly can't be honest with their wives. You know, they just go and suppress this information, and they themselves don't want to say that they're gay.
Mm-hmm.
They don't identify as gay because they identify the word gay with being something that's deviant due to their upbringing and their religious and cultural upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they have to admit to that, you know, I think that it's much, you know, they can go around living in that state of illusion of being straight as long as they have a wife there. So that's one of the problems, that these guys become professional liars. And in fact, I had a letter from a young lady today who told me that after many, many years, she finally had to accept the fact that, you know, her husband is what he is, and it's not going to change, even though she thought it would. But she said he started lying to her, and she said there was no reason to even lie. And I think that once lying becomes inherent in your personality, you start lying about things when there is no reason to lie. You just start making up things.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that comes to be for many reasons, like you said. You know, number one, my heart does go out to someone that's struggling with being gay. You know, I think in my straight mind that that has to be very difficult. And I know I don't completely understand it. You know, I can only understand my side the best. And I know it has to be a struggle. And I know it has to be hard. So I'm very, you know, my heart goes out to them, like I said. However, when they do discover that and realize, hey, you know, I am gay and they're living in this marriage, it seems like there comes a threshold with most of these marriages that they cross into that, you know, they start telling the little lies, and then the little lies seem to snowball. And it's just whatever lies they can do to maintain the facade of the marriage, because, you know what, I imagine it must be very hard out there to switch over.
And I'm also very, very sympathetic, as you know, because I'm the first person to say that gay is not a choice. It's not a lifestyle. It's not like you can choose chocolate or vanilla ice cream, or it's not something that you can turn on and off, that it's temporary or that you went through a phase or you're having these temporary thoughts. I mean, you have to just accept what it is. And I know how difficult that is when you don't want to be gay. But the bottom line is that, like you said, Misty, once you cross the threshold and once you act on it, then you have the responsibility of being honest with the person that you took vows with, that you're going to love forever and be honest with, and you need to tell her. We were talking a little bit earlier about the dangers that it brings to women when they don't know about this. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely, and I'll give myself as an example. You know, I've told the listeners I was married for approximately 10 years, and before that 10 years, me and my now ex-husband, we dated for approximately 2 years. So, you know, I felt like I really knew him before we married. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'd like to ask you a candid question.
Okay.
In the 2 years that you dated, did you feel that anything was off?
You know, I have to say, I did not really have red flags during that time. However, let me back up and give a little bit of history. I was young. I was naive. He was my first serious relationship. So I did not have a whole lot to judge it on. And you got to realize, when you are in love, we know that our brain makes all sorts of chemicals, you know, that we don't have other times. And, you know, I think we look over a lot of those things because we're just so caught up in that feeling goodness of being in love with someone, being a part of someone, someone being a part of you, and creating that future together. And I thought we were both on board, on the same ship, heading towards the same, you know, destination.
Did you notice any other kinds of character defects in him? I'm not talking about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Because your ex-husband was beyond gay. He was really cruel.
Yes.
And had a lot of negative characteristics. You know, had nothing to do with gay.
Well, the one thing that really shocked me was I lived a life that was full of domestic violence. And if you would have known me before I got married, you would have never thought I would have put up with something like that. I would have never thought I would have put up with something such as that. And that was something that he kept very well hid during the 2 years. I mean, we had one little argument, I remember, right before we got married. It was like the week or two before the wedding.
Uh-huh.
And it was a big argument, but it was nothing to what they became. And I just sort of wrote it off. He got upset with me. I got upset at him. I thought, well, I'm stressed. He's stressed. This is what happens the week you get married. because we had a huge wedding. So we were preparing, and I was supposed to have done something. He thought I was supposed to do it. I thought he was supposed to do it. So, you know, it was just one of those little things that sort of happened. And I really didn't think anything about it. That was the biggest thing we ever fought about.
I'm just curious. Did you know any of his friends?
Well, he didn't have hardly any friends.
And I think that's such a key thing that I tell women, that when you're meeting a man, and it has nothing to do necessarily with gay, but just for looking for somebody who has emotional well-being, because we always tell women that after your marriage to a gay husband, how careful you have to be that you don't meet another man who's a predator. Because women are very vulnerable, and there are a lot of men out there who are seeking vulnerable women because they know they can, you know, get away with a lot of things that other women would not accept. And also, I say that, you know, you have to look for some key things. One of them is who are the man's friends? Does he have a social circle? And when these guys, and a lot of them, you know, they're isolationists because they really don't fit into any world. And they're not able to develop friendships. So I think that's a key factor, you know, for women to look for. You know, who are these guys' friends? What are they like?
That's such an important thing. And, you know, I didn't know that back then. I thought, well, you know, his...
Well, sure, when you're young, what do you know?
Yeah, what did I know? I thought I knew everything, and I knew so little.
Exactly.
So, you know, and he had a lot of responsibility at home. I will give him credit there. So most of his, well, not most, all of his close relationships were family tied.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as friends outside the family, I never met. Now looking back, that would be a huge red flag, just as you said. You know, you need to know, you know, your future mate's friends. You know, what are their friends about? What kind of characters are they? You know, what kind of people does he hang out with? So that would have been, that should have been a huge red flag for me, but it wasn't.
And I know it's funny that my ex-husband had a lot of friends.
Mm.
And it was very strange because almost all of them came to me and said, "We're so surprised he's getting married." And that should have been a red flag to me.
Wow, now that's interesting. So his friends came to you and made the statement.
Right. They wouldn't tell me why. And so I just assumed it was because he was the kind of playboy type of guy who said he would never settle down. You know, I didn't ever think in the other direction. You know, but it was so funny because I would say at least a half a dozen of them said, "We're really surprised he's getting married. You know, this really comes to a shock to us. We didn't think he was going to get married."
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, but I was young and I didn't even know what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if I would have suspected, I don't think that would have done it for me.
Yeah. I had no idea what I was getting myself in for. You know, I had no idea. I thought it was love. I thought it was a relationship that was going to last a lifetime because both of their sets of parents were still married.
Mm-hmm.
And they still are until, you know, his mother had passed away. But, you know, it was very important to us that the marriage stay together. We remain married for life. I felt that both of us took our wedding vows very serious. We felt that it was a commitment to God and to ourselves to remain married. And I had the utmost confidence that we would. We would be married. We would stay married till death do us part.
And was the marriage good in the beginning? Or did it quickly deteriorate?
It was interesting. I wouldn't say it was good, but I wouldn't say it was real bad.
Uh-huh.
I would just say there was a lot of adjustment. Because I had never lived with anyone before. He had not lived with anyone before. So I went straight from being in the home of my parents to getting married. So, you know, here we were trying to create this home together. We were both students at the time. And the first year was really, really difficult. And I just thought, okay, this is just the first year full of changes. I had moved, you know, like 150 miles from my parents to attend the university, and, you know, I just thought, oh, you know, I'm feeling a little depressed. I miss my parents. I miss my family. I miss my friends, and that wasn't the case. I really and honestly think that, and we spoke of this on another show, even though I didn't realize it consciously something was going on, I think subconsciously I had already registered it by that time, and I'm sure within the first year of realizing subconsciously that something just wasn't right. And I think that was the root of where, you know, the depressed feelings came in, where I just didn't feel good about myself. my self-esteem just, whew, it really, that first year took the biggest hit, I would think, and it just went down from there.
Did that include your sex life?
Yes, sex life. You know, I was expecting it to be the heavens and earth would move, the earth would just smile. I mean, it was just going to be wonderful because I had waited. This was the man I was going to marry for life. I had waited, saved my virginity for this wonderful man. And to be very honest, it was, I was just shocked. I thought, wow, is this all there is to it? And then I thought, wow, this doesn't seem like we have as much as what other people are talking about, having sex and this and that. And that went on very early. I would say it was, I had these thoughts, I know, within the first month of marriage.
That's pretty sad.
That's very sad. Looking back,
how old were you when you got married?
I was, I think it was 19 or just turned 20, somewhere in through there.
Well, you were a babe.
Yeah, not very
That's
old.
That's why you didn't know any better.
Yeah, I did not know any better.
And chances are maybe he himself didn't really know better.
Probably
not. You know, he was probably hoping that if he loved you enough, that you that love would, you know, change who he was.
Absolutely, and I do think that. Absolutely, I think that. In the beginning, when I first got divorced, I could have never said this. But, you know, with the wisdom I've learned with working with so many women and just over the years and everything, now I look back and I think, wow, how difficult it must have been to think that maybe you could marry someone and those feelings would change. So I honestly think that's the reason he entered the marriage. He thought that that would fix it.
And a lot of these men, as I keep saying, they do love their wives. It's not like they're marrying us out of trickery or they're trying to trick us or they hate women so they're going to marry us and get back at women. It's not that way at all. There's a certain percentage of gay men who can sexually perform and enjoy sex when they're in their teens or their 20s or even 30s. And even if they have those nagging feelings or attractions, they're still able to have feelings for women. You know, it's a transitional point. Not all men, you know, it'd be so much easier if somebody who is gay could wake up one day, let's say the age of 10 or 15 or 20, and say, you know what, this is who I am, you know, let me deal with it. But it just doesn't work that way. And some people tell me, you know, and I deal with hundreds and hundreds of gay men, you know, and they've told me some of them knew when the time they were little kids that there was something different about them. Other men tell me they didn't realize anything at all until they were in their 20s. They didn't even have those attractions to men until that time. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just came out like that, and they were shocked themselves. So I think that most men who go into these marriages go into them for the right reasons, hoping that even if they have something that's nagging at them, that it will go away if they love us enough or that we can fix that problem for them. But we can't. And that's the problem. And I think that when we don't, a lot of men like your husband, your ex-husband, they become resentful. They feel that, you know, you're failing them.
Absolutely.
You're supposed to take away these feelings, and they're not going away.
I didn't do what he thought I could do.
Right.
And, you know, I have to agree with that. Looking back now, like we always say, hindsight is 20/20. And looking back over the years of the marriage, it really got abusive, as I said earlier, and, you know, my friends were taken away, my family members were taken away, you know, like piece by piece, little by little, he was continuing.
It's very common that they isolate us.
Isolate. He continued to find ways to isolate. I mean, none of my friends were good enough. People were using me as a friend. People didn't care for me. No one cared for me like he cared for me. No, my friends didn't treat me right. My friends didn't, I couldn't count on my friends. And it was really sad because that wasn't true. However, I listened to it long enough and I accepted it as a truth. And it was.
Exactly. That's how they peel you down piece by piece. Yes. And if you start hearing something every day, and as we talked about, I think, on the last show, a lot of us have self-esteem issues to start with. So it doesn't take a lot to start pushing the buttons that make us start feeling all the insecurities that we've felt all the years that we had. And these are the buttons they know how to push. You know, they know the words to say that are going to make us feel worse about ourselves. And that's one of the paths that they take in isolating us.
Absolutely. And that was how my marriage went. And, you know, and another thing I'd like to bring up, because he didn't have any friends, I really felt sorry for him. I encouraged him to make friends, but, you know, he never really did, or none that I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt it was my responsibility to be his friend, not only his wife, but his friend. And in a good relationship, that is a good thing. So, however, it's not a good thing at the expense of taking away and removing yourself from family members and friends that love you.
You know, one of the things that I like to bring up at this point, Misty, and, you know, I think that your ex-husband really kind of exemplifies this, and so many of our women, not all, because some women have wonderful ex-husbands, but a lot of them don't. And a lot of them have husbands who are really sociopathic in nature. And a lot of times they can't exactly define what a sociopath is. So I'd just like to take a moment and go over some of these characteristics, and I think that when women listen to this, that they'll certainly hear, you know, some of these truths. And once again, if you would like to call our show and make any comments, we're at area code 646-716-4893. But let's talk a little bit about sociopaths, because I'm reading from a site that I have that's a really excellent one called Profile of the Sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that here are some of the common features and descriptions of the behavior of sociopaths. One is glibness and superficial charm. And we hear that so often from women that, you know, their husbands are very charming to everyone else. You know, that everybody says, oh, you have such a wonderful husband and you're so lucky, because they know how to charm everybody else.
Thank
also
you.
That they're manipulative and conning. They never recognize the rights of others and see their self-serving behaviors as permissible. They appear to be charming, yet are covertly hostile and domineering, seeing their victim as merely an instrument to be used. They may dominate and humiliate their victims, which I think often happens. That happened in your marriage, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You're describing my ex-husband.
Oh, I have more to tell you about him.
Okay.
Grandiose sense of self, feels entitled to certain things as their right. You know, they just feel that they're entitled to this.
Yeah.
Pathological lying, has no problem lying coolly and easily, and it's almost impossible for them to be truthful on a consistent basis, and we see this all the time.
Excellent.
Can create and get caught up in a complex belief about their own powers and abilities. Extremely convincing and even able to pass a lie detector test. And I think that's what happens when you live a lie, that you become, you know, so good at it that you're actually believing the lies that you're telling.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is lack of remorse, shame, or guilt. A deep-seated rage, which is split off and repressed, is at their core. Does not see others around them as people, but only as targets and opportunities. Instead of friends, they have victims and accomplices who end up as victims. The end always justifies the means, and they let nothing stand in their way. Another characteristic is shallow emotions. When they show what seems to be warmth, joy, love, and compassion, it is more feigned than experienced and serves as an ulterior motive. Outraged by insignificant matters, yet remaining unmoved and cold by what would upset a normal person. Since they are not genuine, neither are their promises. Did that describe your husband?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Also, incapacity for love. And here's another really important one that I see in a lot of these men. Need for stimulation. They live on the edge. Verbal outbursts and physical punishments are normal. Promiscuity and gambling are common. And they have callousness and lack of empathy, unable to empathize with the pain of their victims, having only contempt for others' feelings of distress and readily taking advantage of them. We have poor behavioral controls and impulsive nature, rage and abuse alternating with small expressions of love, and approval produce an addictive cycle for the abuser and the abused, as well as creating hopelessness in the victim. Believe they are all-powerful, all-knowing, entitled to every wish, no sense of personal boundaries, no concern for their impact on others. And then it says early behavior problems, usually has a history of behavioral and academic difficulties, but gets by conning others. Irresponsibility and unreliability. They're not concerned about wrecking others' lives and dreams. Oblivious or indifferent to the devastation they cause. Does not accept blame themselves, but blames others, even for acts they obviously committed. Then there's promiscuous sexual behavior and infidelity. Promiscuity, sexual acting out of all sorts. Then they have lack of realistic life plan, parasitic lifestyle. Tends to move around a lot or makes all-encompassing promises for the future, poor work ethic, but exploits others effectively. And criminal or entrepreneurial versatility. Changes their images as needed to avoid prosecution. Changes the life story regularly. And some other related qualities. Contemptuous of those who seek to understand them. Does not perceive that anything is wrong with them. Authoritarian, secretive, paranoid. Only rarely in difficulty with the law, but seeks out situations where their tyrannical behavior will be tolerated, condoned, or admired. Conventional appearance, goal of enslavement of their victims, exercises despotic control over every aspect of the victim's life, may readily state that their goal is to rule the world, extreme narcissism and grandiose. So those are some of the sociopathic checklists, you know, that, you know, I'm reading about. But I see a lot of these qualities in people who have to keep living a lie. That they, you know, the longer you live a lie, the more of a, more easy it is to just automatically become a liar. And I think that's why these marriages take so long in many cases to really discover what's going on. You become proficient at lying, and you attack anybody who questions you. And I see that happen so often with our women. If they ever do get the nerve to confront their husbands, you know, they're shouted down or called crazy. And so the women feel even worse, you know, thinking that it's them, not the husband. So I see that a lot in this kind of behavior. How about you?
Yes, I experienced it. I lived it. And, you know, I don't think that my now ex-husband was nearly as bad in the beginning as how it developed later on, you know, towards the end of the marriage. When we got to the end of the marriage, it was terrible. My life was really in danger. My life was in danger on a daily basis. And in the beginning, it wasn't that bad. I think he just, like you said earlier, he got to a point to where he could, I don't think he could control the urge and or the need to be who he truly was.
Mm-hmm. And he felt you were standing in his way. I mean, even if it's not a conscious feeling of that, subconsciously, if they feel that we're, you know, I think a lot of them feel guilty when they look at us because when they look at us, it's a reflection of their own guilt.
Mm-hmm.
It's like looking in a mirror when they look at us. And
absolutely.
Then they have to first start feeling guilty. And the other part is they feel that we are trapping them. I used to hear that a lot from my ex-husband. He felt very trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And I never quite understood how he could feel trapped. We were in a marriage. What is there to feel trapped about?
Exactly.
You know, we weren't together 24/7. I had a job. He had a job. You know, he went out. He had friends. You know, I didn't have too many because I was isolated.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that he was always feeling that trapped feeling. And I think if women hear that word trapped, that has to be another red flag to you. I mean, a straight marriage with a straight husband, men don't feel trapped. You know, if you're looking to run away from a marriage, then you feel trapped because you don't feel like you're in the right place.
Right, right. And I can't imagine, like I said, it must be very difficult trying to live that life, trying to be essentially two different people. You're
mm-hmm.
trying to hide or get rid of the person that you truly were born as.
I know.
While you try to create another life, and as you said, that straight wife they're sort of standing in the way. Even though they provide them some normalcy, they're standing in the way of that lifestyle that they were meant to live. And it is very difficult. And like I said earlier, as the years progressed, so did the abuse. It got very abusive. and the degrees of abuse, it escalated. And it was a very difficult time. Looking back now, I don't know what in the world I was thinking to stay in situations such as that. However, it just shows how you can get worn down so easily and accept things as normal. When you're dancing inside that circle of crazy, things become normal and you find ways to adapt.
Yes. Can you talk a little more about that, Misty?
Wow.
Dancing in the circle of crazy, because I just love that, phrase. And I use it a lot now.
Dancing in the circle of crazy. It's basically, this was my relationship with my ex-husband now. When you're in relationships and once you cross in to the inside of that circle, and it's an imaginary circle that I call, dancing inside the circle of crazy. When you're inside of it, when you're living it, you don't realize how bad things are. Because if you're living with someone that has a history of manipulating you or lying to you, not telling you the truth, not giving you the full information, and telling you that you're crazy and all this stuff, you start to believe it. You internalize it.
And by the way, Misty, we do have a caller, so let's see who we have joining us.
Okay.
Would like to comment. Hold on one moment. And hello?
Hello. Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Vicki.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
Okay. Hanging
Bonnie
in there.
Bonnie and Misty. Have you been listening to us?
Yes, I have.
And
amazing, because the isolation thing really hits home for me. Seems like my husband, now that I look back at it, he had one friend at a time. And that is what, I've been thinking about an awful lot that you girls have been saying, because it's like, just very cautious about only having one friend and not being friends with everybody.
Do you think it was because he was afraid that people would find out who he was?
Yeah, I do now that I really start thinking back about that, and to even when we were, both working together, it seems like, it just was part of the isolation that I haven't really thought about until, now. And it's really, I'm even thinking about even when we go out to dinner. I know that, we've had several friends, and it would always be like he would only just like one couple. And it seemed like as soon as, dinner was over, boy, he was ready to go home. There was no going out for any, dancing or anything different. It was always just, as soon as dinner's over, let's go. And so that's kind of an isolation.
When you met your husband, did he have many friends then?
In high school, he just had a few. He was in in the band in high school, and he was a drummer. And it seemed like his friends were the drummers. But the thing that is really odd about this that I've been thinking of is those two best friends have just died. And one died, it'll be 3 years ago, August, and the other one died about 6 months ago. And when the first one died, it was like, oh, my gosh, all of a sudden there just wasn't enough time in life to get everything done, and this big flash went off on his brain as to I fulfilled everything, and now I need to do live another life. Is how I kind of looked at it. But
and has he talked to you about how he looked at it?
Yeah, just being totally suffering inside,
Did he say he was suffering for a long time, Vicki?
I would say he's told me like the last 8 years. Is when he it wasn't
something doesn't feel right or he's not happy.
Yeah, that yes, unhappy, but not fulfilled is what he would say. You know, that's what he would tell me. And trapped, when you say
trapped.
Yeah, I was
going to ask you, did he ever use the word trapped?
All the time. He still uses it to this day. And what he says is he feels trapped by life itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's because, you know, he does love me, and he has, you know, a gay boyfriend, and that relationship hasn't panned out. In fact, the sociopath is exactly what the gay boyfriend ended up being like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that's a total difference between the life we had of a nice, calm, you know, relationship where this is...
Oh, excuse me. You mean the nice, calm relationship where he felt unfulfilled? That relationship?
Yeah, exactly. Just everyday living. You know,
right.
Not, mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful life that you built up with him over many years, if I remember from when you called us once before.
Right.
That you had many wonderful years together, and you didn't feel trapped, did you?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, you thought you had a solid relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you had no suspicion. I mean, I think it's good that, you know, at least if women hear your story and our story, and, you know, they're living some of this, that no two stories are exactly the same, no two circumstances are the same, even though it all ends up the same.
Mm-hmm.
But here you were together for a long time with a man and thought you had a wonderful marriage. And even when he would say there's something wrong, that he feels trapped or he's not fulfilled, the last thing you would have thought about is gay, right?
Oh, exactly. And those words would have, in my mind, never, ever have come out of his mouth. And, you know, I mean, if you just saw him on the street, you would look at him and think, you know, nice-looking guy, obviously, you know, just, masculine, nothing, not one single thing about him has that any kind of, you know.
And I think that's the first problem that we have, because we all have this stereotypical image of what gay is from watching the movies and watching guys who swish around and who talk in effeminate voices, you know, like the, what was that show, Straight Guy, Gay Guys with a Straight Eye. You know, and you see all the, you know, extreme gay characteristics that we identify with being gay. So then when we have a man who isn't like that, you know, and certainly a lot of gay men are not, and I think those are the gay men that really feel a sense of self-hatred towards other gay people. Why it takes them so long to come out.
I mean, there was never, it was never a subject that really came up ever until, you know, 2 weeks or so before he told me that he was gay.
It wasn't a subject, but it was certainly something he was doing, correct?
Yes, correct.
You know, he may not have told you, but he was certainly, you know, involved with somebody.
Right.
So he knew himself, but I think that, once again, getting back to that one point on why it's so difficult for gay men to come to terms with, you know, who they are, is because when they see all those stereotypical men who are the effeminate, swishy men, and they say, that is not me.
Right.
Because they can't identify with that man. You know, they feel, that's gay, I'm not like that. And that keeps them, you know, in the closet even longer, because they don't want to accept that's who they are. You know, it's a form of self-hatred. I often, did your husband ever make fun of gay people?
Oh, always. I mean, it wasn't, he did for a really, really long time. We all did. I mean, you know, I mean, it was just I mean, we worked in a supermarket, and if, you know, anyone, I mean, if two people came in and they, you know, seemed that way, we would just kind of like go, gosh, you know, just kind of think, well, that's, you know, that's part of their life. It's not our life, you know. And so,
Misty, do you think your husband was like that?
Actually, as you said that, I was trying to think. And I have to say, I don't remember him making fun of gay people. That wasn't something, you know, we didn't have those types of practices, you know, in our home when we were married. You know, we didn't make fun of people or do things like that. However, I will have to say, I can think of a time or two if someone really appeared really gay, like you said, and tried, and like the stereotype that everyone tries to put gay men in, which is unfair, by the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, he might make a comment or so, but nothing really off color that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the problem, when we were talking earlier, Vicki, on why it's so hard for women who have husbands to accept that they're gay when they have no clue and they can't find proof or evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it a lot in our own support chat room where women have husbands like yours who are masculine and macho and,
mm-hmm.
you know, certainly don't fit that gay stereotype of thinking, well, how could they be gay? Because that's not what gay is. But it is.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's really important to let women know that. Don't let that be your deciding factor.
Mm-hmm.
Just because yeah. someone likes to watch a football game or someone, you know,
goes
mm-hmm. to a gym. In fact, I always tell women if a guy goes to a gym, that's a real sure sign.
Yes, yes.
And especially a straight gym. You know, there was a study done in New York a couple of years ago that showed that there's more gay sex going on in straight gyms than in gay gyms.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes, which I found interesting, but I wasn't surprised because so many of the husbands do go to straight gyms. That's where gay men meet gay men.
And that's funny because I can still remember my husband's comment, I'll never be a gym rat, you know, like someone that would be there working out all the time. And it
mm-hmm.
was, you know, and so it was just kind of a thing where, you know, if he started out at like an hour in the gym, and then, you know, by a couple months it was like 2 hours in the gym, and then, you know.
Well, it was probably an hour in the gym and an hour in the steam bath with someone else.
Yeah, sauna.
In the sauna, because that's a really big pickup place, you know, which I didn't
mm-hmm.
suspect at all either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny that so many of our ex-husbands or husbands have that same common bond of the gym.
Mm-hmm. Or the YMCA.
Well, for sure there. But
mm-hmm.
also, I think a lot of them, when they're coming to terms with themselves, all of a sudden they want to look better.
Oh, yes.
And they want to all of a sudden,
yes.
you know, they weren't in shape for their marriage, but all of a sudden now, when you see, I always tell women, if you see a sudden change in your husband's behavior, and all of a sudden he's changing his whole appearance out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
mine
you have to
had
wonder
to get,
why.
Right. Mine had to get a hair transplant. And, you know, I was like, well, and he was starting to bald, and he was, I mean, constantly talking about it. And I really didn't, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. You know, I mean, I didn't think that he really would. And he was so, you know, I mean, he looked up places. We were actually traveling, and, you know, we were on our way back home, and he had already made the appointment 2 months before we left to go to, as soon as we got home. I mean, we didn't even get home. We stopped there first, and he had the hair transplant thing done, and then we came home. So it was, you know, just a shock that he had already, you know, booked it and had it all planned out, and, you know, my gosh, he was going to go right through with that. I'm like, oh.
And about how long ago was that?
That has been 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, 3 years August. It was yeah, right after his friend died.
And, you know, I hate to sound stupid, but I'm really interested because I don't know anything about men's hair transplants. Could you tell us a little bit?
Yes.
How does that work?
It's truly amazing. They take your hair from the very back, and I would say it was almost from ear to ear across, and it's probably about a fourth of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut a strip out, and that area is where all the little hair follicles, they're just, you know, it's maybe like 6 or 7 inches across the back, and they take out every single one of them, and it's planted inside their hairline, and those hairs are put in there, and then it takes about...
Like surgery?
Yes, it is a major surgery. They actually numb your head. You take antibiotics first. They numb your head. You are in there, like, it's a full, it was probably almost 8 hours
wow.
for him to have this done, yeah. And, I mean, I was just like, oh, my gosh, what is taking so long? But they take, and every single little hair is inserted with a needle,
mm-hmm.
and it's, I mean, it's like, I don't know, I think he had about, I think it was about 800 hairs all in, and then within a week, maybe 10 days, they all fall out.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they fall out, then it takes approximately 6 months, about 6 months, 3 months, we could just see little teeny tiny, you know, like baby hair coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about a year for him to really start getting, you know, the hair in. And you really, you can't even tell. I mean, it's not like they have like little, you know, like plugs all over, but it's really, his hair has grown quite a bit. He's very, you know, I mean, like when he goes to get it cut, he's really cautious of, you know, how they cut it because he just wants to make sure that it's not, it goes from the front of his scalp all the way to the back. But it covers up the bald area. And
I wonder if a hairdresser can tell.
Oh, you know, I don't know for sure. I imagine they can. I mean, I've heard him tell them, you know, that he's had
it. Right,
but
maybe they have to cut it a certain way not to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But does it really grow a full head of hair for them?
It does. It really does. I
mm-hmm.
mean, if you, you know, I know that he would love to go back and have more done. But, you know, it's very expensive and, you know, I'm like.
Was it very painful?
Yes, it really, he said it was, but it was worth it. And your head actually stays numb for quite a while. I think it was probably about 9 months before really he had the total feeling back in the top of the scalp area.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out, you're wrapped in a like a turban thing. And you have to go back the next morning and he was on medication and, you know, really just out of it for a whole day. And then you go back the next morning and they unwrap all that and look and make sure that all the little hair follicles are stuck in there. And then you wear, you know, you just wear a cap for quite a while and then you just start washing your hair normally and all that. But it you know, it's a full, I would say, 2 years really before you just really get it all back to looking like normal, beautiful hair.
And then does it stay like that?
Yes, it does.
In other words,
it really
if he lost hair before because he was naturally balding, will
mm-hmm,
this hair come
mm-hmm.
out?
It does. It still comes out, yes. You know, he's on pills to keep it from falling out, which is, you know, a medication that they give you too that helps to keep it from falling out.
Well, Vicki, I know I've diverted away from the subject, but I really appreciate
yeah.
you giving me insight on that because I'm just not familiar with it at all. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
one topic
well,
that I don't know anybody who's done it.
Yeah, well, it's just another way to, you know, keep looking good.
And I think that women should be aware of that also,
mm-hmm.
that if he's looking that good and there's nothing going on with you, then maybe there's something going on with someone else. Would you say that's true too, Vicki?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, the exercise, the looking good, the having, you know, always had really nice clothes.
Did it ever occur to you why he's doing this?
No, not really. I knew that, you know, he felt like he was always getting old. I mean, you know, he just has this huge fear of being old. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's just like, you know, gosh, I'll, you know, he's going to be 57 next month, and he thinks it's like the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a matter that he didn't feel like he was trying to do it for you, more for himself.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Everything for him.
Isn't that true?
Yes.
Like we say,
mm-hmm.
it's all about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
all
actually.
All of the time.
What what's really funny is, I mean, he spent $5,000 just like that on his hair. But when I filed for divorce and took the $5,000 to file for divorce, oh, my gosh, you would have thought it was the end of the world.
Well, it probably was, because what's more important, your marriage or his hair? I think you had his priorities mixed up there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But how is your relationship now?
You know, I think what has saved us a lot is the fact that we do have some businesses that we have to keep running,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't gotten hateful to each other, and we know that, you know, we have to make it work. And basically, we're still struggling. I mean, you know, we're struggling with just the truth. We're struggling with telling, you know, our family. We still haven't told, you know, parents truthfully what, you know, what's going on. And
is there a reason for that?
I think that we're protecting each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're definitely protecting each other, but
well, you're definitely protecting him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if he's protecting you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm protecting him because I just don't, you know, I'm the one that has to deal with friends,
mm-hmm.
and seeing people that knew us together. He doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
And what do your friends think now that you're not together? Are they asking why?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just, you know, they wonder where he is. You know, I mean, he was here every day. And that's, you know, they wonder where he is and what happened to him and all that stuff. But anyway.
And what's your answer when they ask you?
I just tell him, you know, where he's living and, you know, just basically say that, you know, he's living another life.
Uh-huh. And does he give any reasons when people ask him where you are, what the reasons are?
Nobody's business. So, and that's all he ever says is, what is it anybody's business?
And, you know, one of the things that I would like for you to discuss a little is about the emotional impact of how this hurt you.
Hurt me from the very beginning because it was such a slap in the face as to thinking I really knew who he was and thinking I loved him with all my heart and, you know, believed he was going to be the person to take care of me after 34 years of marriage. But, you know, it's your trust, your love, your whole wedding vows, I mean, everything just hits you and you're just like thinking, how can just one day you say you're gay and nothing means anything to you anymore? It's like getting stabbed in the heart with an ice pick, you know?
Before he told you, like in the months that preceded it, when you look back now, not then, but in looking back, could you tell anything was coming like this? Did you see a change in his behavior at all? We're trying to give tips to women of what to look for.
A little bit more, I would say depression, and more like he really didn't look at me in my eyes anymore. I mean, he would look at my face, but he didn't look at my eyes. He would avoid things. And I would say more than anything, the isolation, because I would want to have, like, my family over and have barbecues and stuff, and he would always have, like, some excuse. No, let's don't do that tonight, or, you know. And I didn't ever put it together until, you know, now when I would see. And I think it's that he didn't feel comfortable sitting there looking at my father and my mother, knowing how he felt and what he was going to, you know, futurely in his mind. He was way ahead of me,
uh-huh.
knowing any of this. So, yeah. Yeah.
So now that, like I say, when you can look back, and once again, when you're living it, you may not have any suspicions why. But is there any kind of tips that you can give women on maybe what they could look for in changes in their marriage?
Well, one thing that I can honestly tell them is to you know, I trusted my husband with everything, and he ran all of our all of the finances, all of taking care of all the business stuff. And I really believe that make sure you check the credit cards. Make sure you just, I mean, even if you just should know. You should know every time where your money's going. And it shouldn't be an issue if you both, you know, I mean, and that's what I, you know, I go back now and I look at things like my credit cards and my bank statements and things like that that I didn't pay any attention to because, you know, I just thought...
You assumed that everything was going to be fine.
Yeah.
Also, can I ask you one more question, Vicki, because I know I look at a lot of letters about this. You were in business with your husband. You two were like a team wherever you went.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a very solid friendship relationship. I have women who write to me and they say, I'm sure nothing's happening because I know where they are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell women, it only takes 30 seconds. You could be in going out to dinner with your husband and he can go into a men's room and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen it happen all the time and I have gay men tell me this all the time. So I think that it's really important for women to understand that even if you're with your husband all the time, even if you have a business together, even if you're in the house together, I mean, you were together as a couple all the time, correct?
Correct, yeah.
But he was still having a full-blown relationship with someone.
Yeah, we went, you know, we rode to work together, we went to lunch together, and, you know, we went home together. But there was obviously something else in between, you know,
Right, because women don't believe this is possible if they're working with their husbands, and I'm sure that was part of it for you, too.
And I think what happens is you become comfortable with each other's roles. You know, I did the front, taking care of people, all that kind of stuff. He was in the back with financing and all that in an office, you know, that was away from visual of seeing people.
Uh-huh.
So that, to me, was two different worlds. You know, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed all that. He liked, you know, being not in the public.
And we have another caller calling in, so please stay on with us, Vicki.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they can ask you some questions. Hold on 1 second. Whoop, we lost the caller. Well, you can always call back and ask. But getting back to the point that I wanted to make to you, if you were with your husband all the time and he was having a full-blown relationship and you had no idea whatsoever and it was going on for a while,
mm-hmm.
that if it could happen to you, people who are so smug and secure of knowing where their husbands are, they have to understand it could happen to them, correct?
Correct. In fact, I didn't, you know, I found out even because this one person, we would water ski, and, you know, he would go with us water skiing and was a good friend to both of us. And so that, you know, that was how I'm like, wow. You know, so it was, you know.
Are you saying this man he was having the relationship with?
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, that he was going out with you?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this a lot, too, that when women are so blindsided, mm-hmm. the part that hurts the most is that these guys all of a sudden are friends with you, not only your husband, but also you.
Yes.
And they're bringing them into your life and into your home.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why when women think that men don't have any time and they know what they're doing and who they're with, well, you know who they're with, you're just not suspecting that's what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that has to hurt more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad enough when you don't know who the invisible enemy is who's taking your husband away.
Right.
But then when you do know because your husband's bringing that man into your life, and I know another situation like that I'm dealing with right now with another woman, you know, mm-hmm. who just found out that, you know, a man who was like the uncle to her children practically because he was always there and wonderful to the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
That there's been this relationship going on for years, and she just feels so devastated, not just by the betrayal of her husband, but also the betrayal of what I call the other man, you know, who ingratiated himself into their life so he could spend time with the husband and not have anything suspicious.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that betrayal has hurt so much.
Yeah.
It's like a double whammy.
Right, right. And mine also went to college during the time that we were working as a extra, you know, wanted to learn more business opportunity, business classes, and took them in the evening time. And drove, you know, an hour away to go to college, and at the same time, this guy did too. So
that's why we, Misty and I, were saying there's all kinds of deceptions when you're dealing with people who are living a lie.
Right.
Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely. You know that they will find ways, and I was very naive to this during my marriage. I had no idea that. And I would have actually sworn on my life that my now ex would not have cheated on me, that he would have divorced me first. I trusted him that much in terms of, you know, having a partner, a sexual partner. And that was not true. Just as Vicki just described, he brought one or two men home that he had met as friends, and I accepted them as friends, and I later found out they were his lovers, and I was clueless. I had no idea. I would have never thought he would have done that.
I know. This is what hurts me the most. Once again, Misty and I will reiterate it over and over and over again that we have great sympathy and understanding for men who are gay. And we even have sympathy for those men who are gay who can't come to them, you know, come to terms with themselves and they get married. But what you do as far as how you handle it and what you do with it, like in Vicki's case, our cases, you know, to bring someone into your home, to dirty up, you know, the home that you have, that to me is the problem. Let's see who we have calling in. Hold on just one second. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, this is Bonnie.
Hi, this is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. You're here with Misty and Vicki.
I've been listening to Vicki's story, and so much of that rings true with me. The isolation, my husband pulling me away from things that were familiar. She talked about his hair transplants. Mine wore a toupee for years. He suddenly decided he wanted to get a Harley and get a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Very hyper-masculine type behavior. So, I mean, it just, you know, it just seems to be a pattern with these men.
Yeah.
And have you known for long, Maggie?
I've known for a little over a year.
Mm-hmm. And how are you dealing with it?
Well, I have asked for a divorce. I'm in divorce limbo right now. I moved out of my house.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to be in there. He had brought men into the house. I found that out. And so I sort of felt like it was contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be in there. So I moved out and moved into an apartment. And I'm trying to pick up and move on, though it's difficult when you've been betrayed this way.
Mm-hmm. And also, were you married for a long period of time?
In May, it will be 37 years.
Well, that's a lifetime. Just
mine's
like with Vicki.
35
and 37 years.
Over half
of
my life, yeah. Over half of my life. And I had heard Misty say one time that her husband was her first and only, and that was the way it was with mine. I've never known sex with anybody but my husband, and I always thought there was something wrong with me, and now I know there wasn't anything wrong with me. I just didn't have the right body parts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is something wrong with you when it comes to a gay man, for sure.
That's true, from his perspective.
I know. But just think how hurtful it is. And does he realize this? This is what I like to know. Do these guys ever realize what they've done?
I don't know. Right now, mine is so wrapped up in himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he feels like, you know, that he has just been, he called me a vindictive bitch. After we went mediation, because I was awarded alimony and I got, you know, the property settlement according to the laws of our state.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like he has been grossly wronged somehow and decided to renege on our mediation and sue me for divorce and drag this out into court. She was, Vicki was talking about how her husband was upset because she spent $5,000 to file for divorce, but he spent $5,000 on a hair transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the same way. I mean, he was upset about, you know, the money for, you know, that he has to pay me for alimony and everything, but he'll spend money to go to the nearest big city to a strip club and throw
mm-hmm.
away, you know, $500 or $600 on a weekend.
Yeah.
And if I behaved like that, if I behaved half the way he has behaved over the, oh, this, what, 5 or 6 months that I've been moved out of the house, he would call me the world's biggest whore.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he, you know, in his mind, he justifies this extremely promiscuous behavior.
Hmm.
Has he ever said he's sorry to you and meant it?
He has said he was sorry, but I don't think he meant it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, mine has. Why would he continue doing what he's doing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I always say with our women, and this is one thing I really want to push for this year, I mean, I've been saying it for a while, I don't understand why women who have been betrayed in this way have to go and spend so much money on a divorce. I feel that the men should be responsible for taking on the expense of the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's what they've done is they've committed fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And in any other legal instance, if someone commits fraud, they're liable.
Yeah.
You know.
And
so
I'm
why should I be liable for fraud?
I'm not saying they committed fraud from the very beginning, because I do believe in my heart some of them really didn't know or couldn't understand it. But in the case that once they do understand it and they're acting on it and living it, then it's their responsibility to take care of those expenses.
Right.
You know,
mine
had no say in this.
Yeah, mine, from what he says, he's known since he was in his teens that he was gay. So he knew he was gay when he married me, but he thought, you know, marriage would fix it. He grew up in a very conservative religious family. His father was a minister.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been acting on these gay urges for at least the past 5 years that I know of.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you know of. You can trust me when I tell you it's longer.
Yeah, that's what I said. When you were talking about, you know, women who say, well, I know where my husband is, you know. I mean, I thought I knew where mine was. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I trusted him. And I gave him the same level of trust that I expected him to instill in me. You know, if I told him I was going to the store, that's where I was going.
Right.
And, you know, he would tell me he was working late, and I believed him. He would tell me, you know, he was doing this or that or the other, and I believed him. And then when I started checking up on things, I found out, no. I actually one time created an online persona on a gay hookup site that he used.
Uh-huh.
And arranged to meet him at a Starbucks. Now, obviously, I stood him up because I couldn't meet him there, but I parked across the highway and watched him drive up to that Starbucks and go inside and then come back out and go inside and come back out. And finally, he drove away.
Uh-huh.
And about the time he drove away, he called me on his cell phone and he said, well, I'm just now leaving work. And I thought, you liar. I am watching. You drive away from Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a kick in the gut because even though I'd seen the online pictures and the emails and the things like that, I mean, actually seeing the lie for myself.
So let me ask you this question, Maggie. Let me ask you this question because this comes up with so many women. And here you are telling me that you saw the online stuff, you saw the emails, and you still didn't want to believe it, right? You still felt
at
that
first,
need to
I went through that denial. Yeah, I went through that denial.
And can you talk a little bit about that for our women who are going through that?
If you've ever studied anything about grief, and I've been going to a grief therapy program for women who are going through a divorce, it's pretty normal from what I understand to deny it because, I mean, this is, in my case, someone who I had spent 36 years with. I had trusted him with my life and with my future. We have two children together. And I think, you know, it was probably just normal for me to deny it and to think, you know, maybe I misunderstood something. Maybe I misinterpreted something. But more and more as I begin to dig and to find things, all those layers of denial stripped away, and I just was left with no choice but to believe that my husband was gay and that he was extremely promiscuous.
Mm-hmm. And did you confront him?
I did I found out in February of last year, and then in the middle of May is when I confronted him, but I did it with a letter.
Mm-hmm.
When he was on a business trip, because I had been advised that confronting a closeted gay man could be violent.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to really kind of to protect him and me, and this is what I told him when we finally did talk face-to-face, I said, you know, this protected you and me. If you did get upset, you know, you were 2,000 miles away. And that way, you know, we were both safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing that happened to me that was really the biggest slap in the face for me was that my husband told me that he would never, ever go on any of those websites and put his picture on anything. I mean, it was just this, you know, trust me, I would never do that.
And that's after you already knew, correct?
And that's all, yeah, after I already knew, after probably 8 months. Maybe 9 months, and he swears to this point today that his counselor was the one who advised him to do that, and he's still going to him, and because he wanted him to find someone else to get out of the relationship that he's in with this gay man that is, you know, awful. But anyway, when I saw that, because I do watch his credit cards, when I saw that on there, and I went on to Match.com, and the pictures that he put on there were a picture of his father's funeral that I had taken a picture of him with all of his in-laws, and he, you know, cut himself out of that and put that picture on there as the, you know, and it was just him in a suit, and the other one was once when we were walking across San Francisco Bridge, and he had that one, and then another one was him on a bicycle. And I just, you know, the thing that it said was just out, soon to be divorced. And then it went into all these things that he, you know, wanted in a man. And when I read it, I mean, I was just like so shocked. And I thought, that's exactly what I want in a man, but not a gay man.
I mean, and did you mention this to him, that you found that?
That's how I told him why I was divorcing. I mean, he's like, what are you doing? You know, when I took the $5,000 out, and it was like 3 days before Christmas, and I just said it was the best Christmas present I could have bought myself.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I filed for divorce. I just saw you on Match.com. And then, you know, of course, at that time, I was just wild. I mean, I was crazy. I was just like going nuts, you know, saying, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing? Everything you said you would never do.
Mine already had all the online profiles before I ever found it out. And one of the pictures that he used was a picture of me and him on the beach together where he had cut me out of the picture.
Yeah,
you know, it was just him.
Yeah, that's the same at his dad's funeral. I was just like, oh!
Yeah.
I mean, it just cut my heart out. I mean, I had never been that low in my life thinking, you know, you.
And I really think that these guys have no clue on how hurtful this is.
Oh, I'm sure, I know mine doesn't have any clue at all about how deeply he has hurt me. He's just going on. He has his cake and eat it too. He's still living in the nice house. He's still got the car. He's still got the Harley. He's still got the money. He's, like I said, he's going out on the weekends to strip clubs and to the local bars and everything. He's got a boyfriend. I'm sitting in an apartment staring at four walls because, you know, if I went out and behaved like that, he'd use it against me, although I intend to use that against him, too. But
well, I hope you do.
That's yet to come.
Yeah, so can you give our women any tips on what to look for, Maggie, because that's one of the things we're trying to focus on tonight. I mean, you were blindsided after so many years.
Yeah, I mean, I stumbled on this quite by accident. You know, but looking back, you know, a lot of it is sort of hindsight. When he turned 50, he really didn't handle that very well. And I think listening to Vicki, some of that kind of came out with her husband, you know, that getting older seems to bother them. You were talking about some of the symptoms of a sociopath. I don't think my husband is a full-blown sociopath, but some of the things that you talked about, like overreacting to things. I mean, you know, he would just blow some things just completely out of proportion. Just, you know, behavior like that.
Was he ever talking anti-gay?
Actually, no. He has a brother who has a gay son, and
uh-huh.
We had frequently had a lot of talk about gay rights and how awful he thought it was, the way his brother treats his son. His brother won't even let his son in the house. So, you know, I mean, I can see that, you know, that my husband, one of the reasons, I mean, he's scared to death his family's going to find out because he knows how they behave toward gay people.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, so no, there was never any gay bashing, which
uh-huh.
is, you know, I guess kind of surprising, you know. But
so what other kinds of tips can women look for?
Well, you were talking about the gym thing.
Did your husband ever say you felt trapped?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, at one point he made some kind of a comment about, you know, well, I think maybe I'll just quit work and let you go to work and support us for a while. We have an empty nest. Our kids are both grown and out. And I just sort of looked at him and I said, well, I just laughed and I said, well, obviously you don't much like our lifestyle, do you? Because there's no way I can support us like this. And he just completely flew off the handle over that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, it was first of all, to threaten to quit work, you know, was kind of out of left field. And then his reaction to my comment, you know, was too. But yeah, I mean, that I took that as a feeling of, you know, maybe he felt trapped.
Uh-huh.
And when I was digging through his computer, I found that he had purchased a change your identity kit from some online website. And and he told me after mediation that at one point he had thought about changing his identity and just disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mine says that all the time. He's like, in fact, just yesterday he said, if there's anything I would really love to do, I would just love to get on an airplane and go somewhere and just disappear. And I'm like,
yeah. Well, mine had money that showed up at mediation that I knew nothing about,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so I have an idea. I have, you know, he was probably squirreling and probably still is squirreling money away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hiding assets.
Mm-hmm.
So would you advise women who are feeling, well, there's just no way this could be happening because I know where he is all the time, to realize that that's not the case?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's not the case, yeah. Mine went to the gym. He would get up in the mornings and go to the gym before work, and I have found out that there was a lot of things that happened in the shower at the gym.
Exactly. I tell this to women all the time, that the straight gyms are the worst place to meet, you know, for men to have gay encounters.
I know. And when he says he's working late, you know, I mean, you don't know. You know, just because he didn't answer his phone at work doesn't mean he's not at work.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I mean, mine became a master at lying. Just, you know, just look straight at me and lie, you know.
They become very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
We were saying earlier tonight that all of these men should have been up for the Academy Award nominations for Best
yeah,
Actor
really?
Of the Year. Right? They could beat out Brad Pitt, you know.
I did get an Academy Award. I joked with my sister last year while all this was going on and I was having to pretend that everything was normal. I said, you know, if I don't get a nomination for Best Betrayed Spouse in a Leading Role, I'm writing a nasty letter to the Academy. And she gave me a miniature Academy Award for Christmas.
That is so funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I could pretend too, but you know, mine was for a higher cause, I like to think.
That's
well,
funny.
I really admire the fact that you were so, you know, diligent as far as getting the proof that you needed. Because I think that women really have to, from both of you, from what we're learning tonight, you really have to become your own best detective.
Yeah,
and start
you
looking
do.
At everything.
I just lucked into, I really followed the right path quite by luck. You know, I was so in disbelief. I think I had to prove it to myself first.
Yeah,
and by that point in time, I had so much information. And then I went to an attorney, and the attorney said, well, you just keep this to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we'll blindside him, and that way we'll keep him from covering his tracks. So, yeah, you know, find a good attorney, find yourself a good therapist, and I understand, you know, good therapists sometimes can be hard to find. I'm blessed with a great one.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's odd because my attorney just says, you know, so he's gay, you know, that's not the issue. The issue is, you know, you have this and this, and this is how, you know, you've got to divide it. And that's, you know, so, I mean, he's just saying, well, that's his life.
Yeah, so unfortunately,
a lot of states are
no-fault states, and even though there is a fault, you can't prove it because it's not part of the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
well, I've been able to prove adultery, and I can file on the grounds of adultery. And
right,
adultery
in your state, adultery
then.
Counts. But in
my
some states,
state, adultery counts, yeah. So,
like in California, adultery doesn't count.
Yeah.
It's a no-fault state. You get a divorce, okay. It could be irreconcilable differences.
Same
but
origin.
It's not a matter if you have adultery, if you have gay adultery, if you have, you know, a harem of adultery. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
because we work side by side for 23 years together, I can't get spousal support because they say that we're both capable of working. And so that just really ticked me off when I found that out last week. I was just so mad. Just because it's just like I would never be in this position. I mean, I didn't want to have to sit there in a lawyer's office. I didn't want to have to spend money on this kind of stuff. And it was just like, you know, I was on the path and retirement was, you know, we've been retired for 7 years, just traveled and did whatever, and all of a sudden everything is just ripped away by his one thing saying, I'm gay. And, you know, Bonnie telling me, saying, your life will change from this day forward. And I'm like, who is she to say that, you know? And next thing you know, it's very, very true.
I know. People don't like to hear the tough love counseling that I give, but the reality is that I don't believe in sugarcoating what's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd rather you be mad at first and then say, you know what, she's right, and not feel that maybe something can work out. You know, I don't like to give anybody that false illusion.
Right.
Because then you hang on to it. You know, nobody wants to have to admit their marriage is over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my husband actually offered me the option of staying married but living apart.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
what
so
my
nice
I thought about that for about 10 seconds and said, no, I don't think that will work out. Because I didn't want to be dependent on a man who'd already spent, you know, umpteen years lying to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine just said that
very
last
proof
week.
Course of action.
Mine just said that last week because he said, Linda, oops, Vicky, he said, we don't have any kids, and what is, you know, a piece of paper with a marriage, you know, with your marriage vows on it, what difference is it? Would just we stay married and live apart? And I'm just like looking at him like, are those words even coming out of your mouth?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they haven't figured out yet what marriage is supposed to be, so it doesn't mean anything to them.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been living
you know,
in an authentic marriage, so it doesn't have that same kind of meaning.
Yeah. Were you having sex with your husband? Can I ask that?
We had not had sex for the last 5 years. What happened with him was he had actually gone to a therapist about 5 years ago and about the gay issue, and he wanted to come out to me then, and whoever this therapist that he went to was, he told my husband, he said, that would be a huge mistake for you to come out to your wife and throw away, at that time, 32 years of a good marriage. He said, just go home and have sex with her, and everything will be all right. And because my husband had had at least one gay encounter prior to that, he went and had himself tested to make sure that he didn't have any, STDs. And we had sex, and it was a complete disaster. And that'll be 5 years ago next month.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I thought he just had problems with erectile dysfunction.
But
and
had
so
that been going on
to,
for a while, Maggie? I mean, it wasn't like it just became bad sex, right?
No, I mean, sex had never been, great. I mean, I heard Missy talk about, saying that, she thought, there was going to be fireworks and
mm-hmm.
all this kind of stuff, and I never had any fireworks.
You know what I tell women? When women ask me, about sex, especially women married to gay men who never had other, partners,
mm-hmm.
I always tell them, turn on a good movie, a good romance, and see what they're doing, and if that's not what you're doing, then there's something wrong. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what straight sex is. And if you don't have that, then you have to really start wondering what's wrong in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, ladies, we're going to have to say goodnight to you because we're almost ready to go and say goodnight for our show. And I can't thank both of you enough. Both of you have really shed some beautiful insight, haven't they, Misty?
Absolutely. Thanks, both of you, for offering your circumstances, your story, because as Bonnie said, there are differences in each story, but there's so many threads of similarity that run through these stories, and I wish this was information I could have gotten, 15 years ago. So it's my hope that this types of information reaches the masses of women that are going through these relationships, because as Bonnie pointed out, there's approximately, Bonnie, didn't you say about 4 million of these marriages in the United States alone?
Yes, there are.
This is
of women who are married to gay men, bi men, A men, B men, whatever names they want to call them, but I always say they're P men. They want a penis, that's what they are. Call yourself whatever you want. They're the penis men. And, in any shape or form, fantasy, thinking about it, dreaming about it, these women who tell me, well, my husband's never acted on it, whatever. If they want it, that's what they are. They're gay. But we hope you ladies will call us again, because I think when people hear it from you, it's one thing to hear it from us, but you're living it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we really appreciate, more than being guests on our show. And hopefully you'll call back soon and we can talk more about many other issues that we haven't even touched on yet. So we'll say goodnight to you, and, hopefully you'll come back to us soon.
Okay.
And
thank you so much, both of you.
Vicki and Maggie, you are great.
Thanks.
All right,
good
we'll
luck,
talk
Maggie.
To you soon.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
And Misty?
Yes.
In our last 2 minutes, we just want to say good night to all of our listeners. If any of you need information, you can go to my website at www.gayhusbands.com with an S, gayhusbands.com, and write in, ask me for the free newsletters that we have, monthly newsletters, all kinds of information, and also Misty's counseling, grief counseling and coaching. You can find out about that by writing to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to pass on Misty's information to you. Misty, do you have a class coming up?
Yes, I do. Thanks for bringing that up. I have what I call a very important class coming up this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
It is that it's one of the Saturday seminars. I do one per month. It's always the second Saturday of the month. And this topic, and each month is a different topic. This topic, I chose grief because each of the women that come to me are really dealing with a lot of grief issues, as people learn through these calls, and it's not just about losing a relationship, it's about losing, your own identity, your future, what you're grieving, your future, your past, everything. And this coming Saturday seminar, I really think is going to be one of the best ones I'll be able to offer this year. It's going to last for approximately an hour and a half, and in that time, you'll get a downloadable book, a little booklet about grief. It'll just go through the different stages. It will define different things for you because grief is so tricky. It's the roller coaster. It's a roller coaster of emotions.
And let's just announce that if people want to get in touch with you directly, they can write to you at Misty Lynn Hall, M-I-S-T-I-L-Y-N-N-H-A-L-L, bondk@aol.com. Or if you couldn't get all that information down in a few seconds, write to me at bondk@aol, and I'll forward you Misty's information.
Thanks.
Misty, thank you for another wonderful evening.
And you as well.
We want to thank our guests for calling in to the Straight Wives Talk Show, and we'll be back with you again next Sunday night. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.